Welcome to the Aspen Chapel podcast with me, Nicholas Feasey. Thank you, Heather. And what fabulous music. That was absolutely amazing. Thank you. We're on our third, as Heather said, a bit looking at the nature of reality. And, you know, people might think, you know, how come I'm coming to, you know, a chapel or a church on a Sunday and we're talking about the nature of reality? As if, you know, when you're talking about God and all that sort of business, it's not about reality, it's about something else. But we always have a phrase here at the chapel, we know, when we talk about what our purpose is. And our purpose really is to try and live life more skillfully. You know, how do we live life more skillfully? And for me, you know, when you're looking at the nature of reality, if you're looking at religion or about our spirituality, you know, everything has to be grounded in that reality. You know, religion has to be grounded in reality. Relationships, if they're not grounded in reality, they fall apart. You know, politics, it's a key subject. You know, alternative facts. I mean, how do you find the reality? And I think it's so relevant today to look at that. And in the first of the series, I always do a bit of a catch-up, so anyone who's not here. In the first of the series, we looked at how our understanding of reality is dependent on the perspective from which we're looking from. Perspective is key when we're looking at reality. In the Stone Age, we'd actually talk about God riding his chariot across the sky every day. And that was a reality to them. And someone from the Middle Ages would say, you know, Jesus being in heaven. That's what kept that reality. And nowadays we look at it from a different perspective. We might think in terms of atoms or quarks, but we would equally be insistent that to look at it another way would probably be a scientific heresy. And then last week we looked at what we're actually, you know, what part of us decided on what's real and what's not real. And the bit of us, of course, that decides what's real and what's not real is our minds, that wonderful organ that has a complete monopoly of all our thoughts. Our minds determine what we think. They determine that what we think is real most of the time based on the available information. Reality, I think, though, is that which continues to exist after you've stopped believing in it. You know, reality is that which continues. It's not dependent on our belief. The word reality comes from the Latin word realis, which means relating to things. That's what the word comes from. It means relating to things. And that's interesting because we normally think of reality as the what-isness of stuff, you know, things that we bump up against. But reality is, in fact, in terms of the root of the word, is really about relationship. It's the relationship between things. So that's where we got to so far. And if you want to catch up on it, if you look in front of you, if you're new to the chapel, the red cards are the ones where you can get the information as to how to catch up, you know, watch podcasts where you can just get the message or just watch the actual talk itself. And the blue cards, if you want to fill in one of those, if you're new, you can get on our mailing list by looking at those cards. So our perspective is important, and our minds determine what we think is real. But I'd like to say that we're not our minds. Most people, you know, a lot of, you know, if you go out there in the world, a lot of people do think they are their minds. But I would want to say that we are not our minds. I think we're so much more. We're our hearts. We're our souls. We're even our communities. You know, we identify with our communities. We are all of that just as much as we are our minds. So if we're looking at how we determine what's real, you know, given that, you know, how do we identify it? Well, for me, the access point, the go-to point of the nature of reality, when you're looking at reality, our access point for reality, for me, is our consciousness. That's where we access what's real. And for me, that includes our minds, and yet our minds often give us an impression that they are our consciousness rather than the other way around. You know, a few weeks ago in another course I was doing here, I quoted Joseph Campbell, the American writer. We were talking about friendship with diminishment. We were looking at, you know, what happens when you diminish. And he says, the problem in middle life, when the body has reached its climax of power and begins to decline, is to identify not with the body, which is falling away, but with the consciousness of which it is a vehicle. He says, this is something I learned from myths. What am I? Am I the bulb that carries the light? Am I the bulb that carries the light? Or am I the light of which the bulb is the vehicle? Am I the bulb that carries the light, or am I the bulb of which the light of which the bulb is the vehicle? Am I the mind? And this is really where we get to. Am I the mind that accesses consciousness, or am I consciousness being accessed by the mind? So it's a question of, you know, does the mind produce consciousness? Or does the mind pick up consciousness? Does the mind receive consciousness? That is a key question, I think. But before we get on to it, we have to look at what consciousness actually is. And dictionary definitions are always very good in these things. And I went to looked at a few dictionaries. The first dictionary definition I came across for consciousness was the experience of being, which I think is pretty good. You know, that's quite good. And the second one, the Oxford English Dictionary says that consciousness comes from the Latin words con scios, which means scios to know and con together. So consciousness is something that we know together. But actually, the best definition I came across was from the International Dictionary of Psychology, which sounded good. And the International Dictionary of Psychology calls consciousness the having of perceptions, thoughts and feelings, awareness. And then they go on, this is in the dictionary, they go on to say, the term is impossible to define except in terms that are unintelligible without a grasp of what consciousness means. So you can't really know what consciousness is unless you know what consciousness is. And then it goes on to say, and this is in a dictionary, consciousness is a fascinating but elusive phenomenon. It is impossible to specify what it is, what it does, or why it evolved. Nothing worth reading has been written about it. And that's in a dictionary. Nothing worth reading in a dictionary. And do you know why I like that? Nothing, because it puts us in the driving seat. It's really saying, you've got to come up with your idea of really what consciousness is. And I always think, you know, that's what we try and do at the chapel. Although we're sort of, this is all about spiritual stuff and religion and church, things like that. You know, I don't like to think that we go, hey, guys, this is the way it is. And, you know, get into this program. What I like to do is for us to put up stuff and for you to actually think, well, does that make sense? Does that not make sense? You know, our role, Heather and I, and the people up here, is to put you in the driving seat for you to decide what is actually going on. You are the authority. And that's what this dictionary is saying, that really we are the authority in deciding what is consciousness. It's down to you in the driving seat to decide what is relevant to you and your life and make those decisions accordingly. Everyone else here is to support us, all of us, in doing that. We want to support each other. So how do we work out what consciousness actually is? Well, let's start by imagining that we are without consciousness. There is no consciousness there. And I think we can then add to that. So maybe the first thing that we want to add to deciding what consciousness is obviously sight. And, you know, it's useful sometimes, I know this is obvious, but it's useful to really put these things out there. And the first thing that really can categorize our conscious is our sight. Is, and I've got ears up there as well, I notice, but is our sight. The sight is the color, the light, the dark, the shapes, the 3D. That's what sight is. All of it, if we look around, you know, our sight includes perspective, it includes all the different colors, it includes the light coming through, that which makes you. And then we've got the ear, you know, the telephone, the ringing, the music, the vibration, all of that. That's the second thing. You're hearing my voice right now. We're conscious of sight, we're conscious of sound. And then the third thing is, I hope it's come up, yes, smell. The olfactory sense. And, you know, the olfactory sense, actually, funnily enough, it's the oldest sense, actually. No one can prove this, but there is an old wives' tale which says that the sperm gets to the egg through smell. I think it's so interesting, don't you think? The sperm gets to the egg by smell. That's how it happens. And funnily enough, smell is linked to memory as well. I mean, I don't know if you've ever rifled through your mother's wardrobe or things like that. You suddenly get this smell of that fur coat. Or whenever I go down to the schoolroom down here, the classroom, the smell of rubber and pencils immediately throws me back into it. So there's a link there in terms of smell and all that sort of business. And animals are a very strong thing. Of course, the next thing we have that is a sense of taste, sweet, sour, bitter, all the different dimensions. I have to check now. All the different dimensions of taste, that's the next thing. So we're looking at all the things that make that up. And then, of course, we've got body sensations. That's another thing. You know, hot, cold on the skin, pain. You know, all the feelings that we have, emotions, hunger, need to pee, itch, you know, sexuality, the funny bone, all that sort of business. That's all, you know, involved in our feelings. And then, of course, we have the mental imagery. We have, the idea of memory, reason, plans, emotions, feeling, sense of self, all that sort of business. And really, all that stuff is what makes up our consciousness. And it's really worth saying that because we take it for granted all the time. We take for granted all the senses of our consciousness all the time. There's a wonderful story of a group of students who were asked by their teacher, were asked to list the seven wonders of the world. And then there was some disagreement. They came up with the following. They had the Egypt's Great Pyramids, Taj Mahal, the Grand Canyon, Panama Canal, the Empire State Building, St. Peter's Basilica, China's Great Wall. And after gathering up all the votes, the teacher noted that one quiet girl student hadn't turned in her paper. So she asked the girl student if she was having trouble. And the girl said, yes, a little bit. I couldn't quite make up my mind because there were so many. So the teacher said, well, tell us what you have and maybe we can help. And she said, well, I think the seven wonders of the world are to touch, to taste, to see, to hear, to feel, to laugh, and to love. And really, you know, we do take all that for granted. We forget the incredible gift, when you're going towards dying, you don't forget it, but you know, you forget the incredible gift that consciousness is. And for me, real wealth lies in the ability to appreciate experience. Real wealth lies in our ability to appreciate experience. So we become so much more alive when we're aware of the miracle of actually being here. Suddenly everything, if we have the miracle of being here, everything becomes more real. We're less in our heads. It's not so much about our minds anymore. It's about being conscious of everything there is. We become our consciousness rather than becoming our minds. We begin to realize that we're not just our minds, but we are part of something much greater. And that part is manifested in our consciousness. So how do we begin to more identify with consciousness rather than our minds? You know, and I think that, if we're looking at reality, that's what we need to work out, how we identify with it. And the Dalai Lama was very good on that. And he wrote something in a book called The Good Life. He spoke something in a dialogue he had. It was actually in England. And what he wrote was, he said, the nature of consciousness or awareness is such that it's not at all material. So the first thing he says, consciousness is not at all material. It has no material form or shape or colour whatsoever. As such, it's not quantifiable in scientific terms, and that doesn't lend itself to current scientific investigations. Instead of having a material nature, he says, consciousness is by nature mere experience or mere awareness. When I say I know or I am aware, there seems to be an agent, I, who engages in the activity of knowing or being aware. But what we mean by consciousness, he says, is that capacity in dependence upon which one knows or is aware. In other words, it is the activity or process of knowing itself. He says that consciousness is the process of knowing itself, and as such is mere awareness. This is because, generally speaking, we associate it with an external object or a pleasant or an unpleasant sensation. That is, whether we're thinking conceptually or simply having sensory experiences, awareness itself arises in the form of appearance of an object, and as a result, we don't recognize it as mere awareness. So I might say, there is a white T-shirt, and I identify my consciousness with the white T-shirt. I am looking at the white T-shirt. So the consciousness is about the white T-shirt and about myself looking at it. What the Dalai Lama is saying is that consciousness is that which enables me to see that as a white T-shirt. It is the knowingness that is there. It is what gives you the knowingness. That's because we're thinking conceptually rather than having sensory experiences. Our ordinary experience consciousness becomes caught up with the dualistic appearance of object and subject. So he's making the point that in our experience of consciousness, we shouldn't be grounded in our I-ness or our minds, but instead we should be realizing that consciousness, rather than being our minds, it gives us the capacity to know. He says, when I say I know or I am aware, there seems to be an agent I who is engaged in the knowing. But what we mean by consciousness is the capacity or the dependence upon it. So he goes on to say, while maintaining profound alertness, if you're able to put a stop to the turbulence of your mind, the conceptual thought process and patterns that continually run on, you can perceive a deeper level of reality. You must maintain alertness and gradually stop the fluctuations of thought and sensory experience. And this is really where meditation comes in, to stop that. Then it's possible to have a glimpse of what he calls the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind. Then it's possible to glimpse the reality of the nature of consciousness in contrast to consciousness that's linked to physical reality. So he's saying that this thing that we call conscious is the capacity to know. And I think that's quite an important thing. When he talks about the nature of the mind, he's not talking about the nature of our rational minds. The root word of mind is the old English one, G-E-M-Y-N-D, gemid, which actually means memory. The mind is about memory, remembering. And the idea is that there is more than just the rational mind that we have. Each of us has a genetic mind that's given to us in our DNA. You know, the genetic mind, when the sperm smells its way to the egg, the genetic mind tells the cell how to grow. That is, you weren't thinking, oh, right, I need an ear now. I must put an ear. No, the genetic mind, the memory, makes that happen. It creates that happen. There's a genetic mind. There's a racial mind as well that's handed on from our parents, you know. That's there. There's a planetary mind that remembers when things grow and how to make the seasons happen. There's a mind in the planet. And there's a cosmic mind that remembers through gravity and all the other forces how to keep the heavens in order. So there are different minds. Our rational mind's not the only one. And the Dalai Lama here is suggesting that there is a mind of consciousness. Not just a human rational mind, but something that has been there for eons that enables consciousness to remember, to call to mind in order to order things. And this is where it all comes back to that question I posed at the beginning. What am I? Am I the bulb that carries the light? Or I am the light of which the bulb is a vehicle? Is consciousness created by the mind, or is the mind tapping into a greater consciousness? Am I the brain that creates everything, or is it the brain that is in fact created by and part of a greater consciousness? This is really the eternal debate. And if you really want to see this, there's a conversation between Rowan Williams, who's the old Archbishop of Canterbury. He's not that old, but, you know, compared to us. Richard Dawkins was talking to him, and Richard Dawkins is all about materialism. And they look at the whole nature of religion. It's a 40-minute thing. And I'll put it in the notes that go out in the email, how to access it on YouTube. And it's a 40-minute thing, and they talk about, oh, God, you know, reality and selfish gene and spirituality. And they right the way come down to this topic. What is the nature of consciousness? Where is it coming from? That's where this whole debate, the whole religious materialism debate, when you analyze it, comes down to where we are right now about the nature of consciousness. Dawkins, the materialist, says, I suppose I'm committed to the view that consciousness is something that emerges from brains, from within brains, and nobody understands how. Materialist view. Rowan Williams said that consciousness is something emerging to resolve problems. So he's saying that consciousness is something that is continually emerging. And here at the chapel, we obviously come down, you know, that greater mind is part of the emergence of that consciousness. And we would definitely here come down on the Rowan Williams side of the emergence of it. That as we become more self-aware as a species, humans have become more aware of the consciousness that's within them. As we become more aware as a species, we become more aware of the consciousness within us. What differentiates humans from all other species is this self-reflective nature. And it is that self-reflection, you know, that we are here now at a point in looking at the true nature of reality. We are aware of the self-reflection on the nature of who we are. And we're asking whether or not we are a product of that consciousness or whether or not our brains produce that consciousness. And this seems to me absolutely crucial in looking at the nature of reality. Is it something that's coming from our brains? Or are we tapping into something? Are we objectively witnessing in that there is an I who is witnessing all that's going on? Or are we subjectively witnessing in that we are realizing, as the Dalai Lama says, a capacity to know that we are part of something that we can link into? In that case, I think what we're talking about is experiencing ourselves as consciousness and the mind of consciousness, as opposed to experiencing ourselves as being our rational minds. And that is a big step. We're saying that we're not just our little rational minds that can think back 60 or so years, or our species minds that can think back 10,000 or so years, or our planetary mind that can think back 4.5 billion years. But we are suggesting here that we are the mind of consciousness, that we are part of the mind of consciousness that goes back 13.7 billion years to the Big Bang and before. That is what we're talking about in terms of the mind of consciousness. Checking I'm on the right slide. And we're going to look at this more next week as to how we are within that consciousness and what it means for us looking at the nature of reality. Thank you. Thanks for listening. If you feel moved to make a donation to the chapel, please go to aspenchapel.org. Thank you. And if you'd like to receive these podcasts regularly, subscribe to the Aspen Chapel through Apple, Google Play, YouTube, or any other outlet.